Well, the one thing, and he's calling out two specific guests I've had. The one thing about me is that I bring on anybody, not anybody, but like people from all different areas onto the show. And no matter what their interest is or what their MO might be, there's still people underneath, and I enjoy getting to know all of them. Whether I want to continue to know them after becomes another story, but for the most in the most in most cases, I do. Mangini wants to know, Orlando, did you have a collecting idol growing up, or did you kind of collect on your own?
Collected on my own. The only people I collected with when I was young was just the kids in my block, but I collected pretty much on my own. As far as an idol, yeah, Mickey Mantle was my idol growing up. You know, as a Yankee fan, also Yankees and Orioles, but mainly a Yankee, Mickey Mantle. When I started collecting, it was the late 60s, and that's where, you know, Mantle kind of retired, but I did get a chance to follow him and just kind of. Mantle's my man.
Mine was this guy right here, Dale Hawerchuk of the Winnipeg Jets. You know, I collect hockey mostly. I collect all sports, Orlando, but hockey's like my number one. And he just passed away a couple of years ago. You know, way too young. But he was my original, you know, athlete that I really enjoyed. And even though he never took us to the Stanley Cup, he was still our hero in Winnipeg as young hockey fans. A couple more comments. Hodges says Orlando is the best. He's an inspiration in my collecting journey. And Bobby Burrell, another veteran, says the cost of the card is the offset of labor. The value of the card is the pleasure of possession. The reward is priceless. Orlando knows this only too well. And Bobby Burrell has just become a poet, I would have to say right there. Bobby, thank you so much, as always, for being here. Howard Chuck was great. Yes, he was, Dukes. Yes, he was. All right. So I wanted to ask you about your 52 Topps Mickey Mantle. And another little caption I put in the description was talking about authentic altered cards and kind of where they are, how they are perceived in the hobby by many. And I'm going to be curious what the chat thinks of this too. So why don't you tell us the story behind your 52 Topps Mickey Mantle card? And where your heart lies with respect to it.
Okay. Well, you know, my man, the story of my Mantle card was that it was at an auction and it was authentic altered. So it was a find, an attic find, and PSA graded authentic altered, and it was just a perfect mantle. I've been looking for a mantle all of my life. I had every mantle card except the 52 mantle, and I just when I saw it, I said, this is the one I want, you know. And so I contacted the auction house and talked to the guy that I literally went out to the house when they found this card. It was they found it was an attic find, that it was in a the old man had passed away. Family never knew they collected cards at all. And it was found in the attic in a wooden box with some of his toys. There was a stack of about 80 something Topps 52 high number cards, and they were wrapped in some twine. And the family ended up that they knew somebody that knew about cards, and they contacted that person, and that person actually was like a cousin of the guy from the auction house. And the auction guy went out there, looked at it, and the cards were mint. They were right out of the pack that the gentleman that passed away, the grandfather had opened. So he sent them all to PSA, and you know, he told me all this story, you know, because I want to know, when I'm going to buy a card that's going to be a lot of money, the most money I've ever spent personally on a card, I want to know. And it's altered. How is it altered? Or what way is it altered? So he told me the story that they had sent it over to PSA, but he knew that it wasn't altered. Those people didn't know anything about altering or trimming. So some of the cards, I think it was 20 something of the cards out of the 80, about 20 of them came back. They were altered or minimum size from PSA. They didn't slab them. They resend them to SGC. SGC took a look at all the cards that were minimum and were not graded, and Some of them got grades, and some of them remained minimum size. So mine basically is a it's a minimum size from SGC, but it's a authentic altered. And the reason that I did this just in fun and jest, I put my label on there. Let me take this off. Let me give you guys a good look at the 52 mantle. So that's really what it is. And I'm the second owner of this card as it came out of the pack.
Amazing.
Give you a good look at it there so you can see it's literally a mint card. The guy at the auction house, when he first saw it, he said that it was, he says, this looks like a $1 million card. He thought it could grade it, a high 8.5, 9. Give you a good look at the corners and stuff. And it's nicely centered top to bottom. It's got a little glare there, but it's nicely centered both ways. So anyway, the guy said that when he first saw it, he said, you know, that card could be like a $1 million card. And then when he got it submitted, it came out that it was a minimum size card. So, here, I'll show you the little label. It's
the color on that is spectacular. See, even looking at
authentic
it through the
altered screen. But it's not. It's right out of the pack, Jeremy.
Yeah.
It's literally right out of the pack, and it was in that box for 70 years. So this scared bidders away when they saw authentic altered. A lot of people didn't want to pay up on something like this. So I was able to pick it up for a price of a high one, essentially, you know, and it's literally, as you can see, the back is, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, that is $1 million. That is $1 million card, Orlando, just because a grading company doesn't want to put it in their slab. I think you've got an absolute steal. And I respect, I mean, first of all, that isn't altered. We know the card is not altered. Like we're 90% certain that card is not altered. That's what it was pulled out of the pack.
Yeah.
But the fact that PSA puts altered on that slab, it's kind of a double-edged sword. On the bad side, it takes away some of the shine on the card. On the good side, you got yourself an absolute steal on an amazing card.
I would have never been able to get one that quality unless it was labeled authentic altered.
Yeah, no, I.
So I didn't want it reholdered in the SGC because I got to leave it in PSA because I have the whole, my PSA mantle run is in a PSA registry also. So I'm not going to change it, but I wish it would say not altered, just authentic minimum size on the PSA holder. Because there is proof, and we have a letter from the family. I have a letter from the family and from the guy from the auction house that tells the story and, you know, say that, no, this card came right out of the attic like that.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Let's go to some comments about it. So Dan says, there are cards that are so old that altered is meaningless. You just need to know that it's authentic. I think that holds true for me on some cards for sure. Justin says the blue on the mantle card is where it's at. Yeah, that color was outstanding, Orlando. Bob Boozle is a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle collector. He just started a true 52 Topps Mantle collector as of 2 minutes ago. Welcome to the club, Bob Boozle. Chris says the minimum size is such a crock. Topps cut the cards. John Mangini agrees a lot of minimum size is nonsense as they came out of the pack that way. They didn't have perfect printing in 1952 and the 89s, all the cards I pulled, and in the 80s, all the cards I pulled weren't exactly the same size. I mean, that with some brands, that actually holds true even more today. He goes on to say, but PSA controls the hobby. I think PSA doesn't control the hobby. They control the Kool-Aid that the hobby drinks. That's the way I would put it. And the hobby drinks it up. They drink it up like it's going out of style, like it's water and the well is about to dry. Mike Petty says that mantle will be a PSA 9 someday, as it should be, as it should be, I believe. Joe thinks it's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. 86 says, what reason did two companies say it was altered? So did you ever, can you answer that question? What reason was, I know PSA doesn't give a reason. Did SGC give a reason?
PSA doesn't give a reason. They just put altered when it's short. And yeah, SGC gave a reason. They said it was short, 1/16th of an inch short. So it's minimum size. By 1/16th of an inch, it's not exactly what they wanted. And remember, these were hand-cut cards. You know, they cut them with the machine, but they had to put them precisely. So that this particular batch of 52 high numbers, there were, like I said, about of the 80 cards, there were about 20 that were minimum size. It just, they were cut short from tops. 1/16th of an inch makes it from an authentic card to a PSA 8 or 9 card.
Bob Boozle says, but who stirs the Kool-Aid? I'm going to go out on a limb and say auction houses stir the Kool-Aid. You know, content creators stir the Kool-Aid. Jerry Petrie says, buy the card, not the grade. I mean, that's you know, just kind of standard advice, standard good advice going through the hobby right now for sure. Oh, Dan says, that 52 mantle is now a premium card because it was in Orlando's collection. And that's a pretty neat comment. We're talking about the provenance of cards and whose they were. I once bought a card because of whose it was before Orlando. I'll quickly tell you, I bought the Sports Illustrated for Kids Tiger Woods rookie card from the Dr. Newman collection. You might have heard of it, out of Florida. It was sold, I believe, was it Memory Lane? So that sold that collection a few years ago. And I bought his old Tiger Woods SI for Kids because he was a legendary collector with a legendary collection. And I thought that was a pretty cool provenance to have. How do you feel about that kind of approach?
I upgraded my 1888 Goodwin Champion set from Dr. Newman when he passed away. I bought a lot of his cards and I picked up some really nice stuff, like the highest graded Jack Dempsey from 1888, a 7.5 that Dr. Newman had. So I did get some of his cards. And yeah, I love, here's a card that, I don't know if you can see, but this card was in Roberto Clemente's personal collection.
Wow.
See that? It's Roberto Clemente's
collection.
Roberto Clemente collection. This
awesome.
Card was in his personal collection. And his wife sold it. And I actually met Vera Clemente and got her autograph.
Oh, that's so, that.
That's the kind of stuff I just love to have. That, not a real expensive card, but it came from Clemente himself, his collections, personal collection. So
that's unbelievably cool. Like we were just talking about, you know, the provenance of a card coming from a collector you admire or you just like as a friend, sort of thing, or you know, so, you know, the Dr. Newman sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then you have a card that came from Clemente's personal collection. I mean, you know, some people might enjoy having a card from Dimitri Young's collection when he had the, you know, all the Hall of Fame rookie PSA 10s, although 95% of them were likely, you know, should have been in altered holders, but weren't, right? But that's a special type of provenance right there when you have a card that was owned by an athlete like Roberto Clemente, an absolute legend. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I just love stuff like that. And I do have cards also. I collect Cuban cards, and there's Richard Merkin was one of the biggest Cuban card collectors in the world, really. He had the biggest collection. And when he sold his, I have a few of the cards that say, you know, from his collection too. So,
awesome.
And there's a lot of stuff like that out there. And I just love to see things that were collected by some of the OGs of the hobby like that.
Right. Like having a card from Dr. Beckett's collection or, you know, I mean, some of these Jefferson Burnett card. I mean, one could only dream to be able to own something like that for sure. Yeah. Super, super interesting and enjoyable. Like just adds another dimension to collecting, you know, it'd be nice to go to the national one year and purchase cards from specific people that I haven't yet, just because I want that connection. And it just adds to the whole thing we were talking about earlier about this hobby as a community. And it's not just always about what they're worth. It's, you know, it's about the experiences we have. Why else do we travel to Cleveland or Atlantic City or Chicago every second year? You know, we're not just doing it for the cards. We're doing it for the people, you know? And that's yeah, that's always really fun to think about that and go that way for sure. I want to just dive into the authentic altered thing a bit more because, you know, and I'll just sort of share with you, Orlando, my approach, which I don't think I own a single altered card in my, well, known altered or, you know, assessed as altered by a grading company at this point in time. But, and I wouldn't seek out an altered card, an authentic altered card, unless it's like, there's probably really one card that I can think of. Maybe there's a couple. There's a couple, like a, you know, an old Shoeless Joe Jackson or a 52 Tops Mickey Mantle. Like I would actually love to have a trimmed mantle in a 52 Tops trimmed mantle where the slab said trimmed, like authentic, altered, trimmed, but the card presented beautifully because for the same price, I could get a pretty beat up one where maybe it's, you know, miscut off center, it's been driven over, that kind of thing. That's kind of cool too, but I would enjoy a card. I would rather have for the same price a trimmed 52 Tops mantle versus a real ugly PSA one. Now that's just, or SGC one for that matter. That's just me. And I wonder where you fall and where people in the chat. I know some people would say, I don't want any trim cards in my collection. I'd rather have a real dirty PSA one or two or a low grade, but I'd rather have a presentable, a card that presents better when it comes to that price point.
I think there's two factors involved there. First, you're talking price point. If it's a card that you just can't cannot afford more than a two or something like that, then you got to look at something else because you're going to get, you know, anything a one or a two, a one's going to most likely be run over by a truck, you know, creases. A two is also going to have some creases or some defects there, you know. But yeah, in a case where it's a high expensive card that I'd like to have a five because my goal is to have mid-range five and up, you know, for 50s or whatever, you know, I can't afford that in a mantle. So you got to go with that. So the money part, you know, your budget is going to really kind of dictate. And for me, I'd rather have eye appeal. I'd rather have that authentic altered that looks beautiful than have even a two that has creases or, you know, maybe some scuffs or something on that, you know. Now, the other issue is, and I do have altered cards, but they're because of the rarity of the card. One of the cards that I have, and I don't have it with me here, it's in the safe deposit box, is the 18, it's a football card, the 1894 Mayo Cut Plug Anonymous card. And it's called the Honus Wagner of football cards. There's only 10 of those cards known to exist, graded by both SGC and PSA. And this card is, it's a second, it's really the first football card ever made, a football set ever produced, the 1894. And they would put in tobacco tin with real tobacco in it, you know what I mean? And they're big cards. And what happened with that particular card was this was a big name player at the time, but that when the printing process, they forgot to put the player's name on the bottom of it. So the name never appeared and they stopped the printing of it and all the other cards in the set. More of them that were produced, and they all have the name, but this one did not. And the player is Dunlop, and Dunlop was one of the top players at the time. He ended up being one of the a coach later on, and one of the early football guys with Walter Camp, you know. So this card that I am talking about has the black border, like the Mayo cards, black border. Somebody colored in the top border. not trimmed, it's colored in because, like the 71 Topps baseball with that black border, it has a similar border. So they colored it in and it came back authentic, altered. I know it's colored. There's only 10 cards that exist to that card in the world. I had an opportunity to get it. I jumped on it and I got it. I don't care if it's altered or not. And I know it's altered. You could tell it's altered, but that's the rarity of that. I have a few other cards like that. There's less than 10 known to exist. You know, another one's altered. I have a Cuban card also that there's only one known. There's only one on the PSA pop report. There's only one card, period.
Right. And it's
And
altered.
it's altered. It's
Yeah.
trimmed, but it's the only one.
Yeah.
So in those cases, yeah, rarity where you just get it when you can get it. You can't afford to get it in a decent grade, you know. So that's what I consider that. But when it is altered, Jeremy, I will only buy the card if I know exactly what that alteration is. And there are some alterations I will not buy. If it's been added color or something like that, I won't buy that type of, the black border color is a different issue. But for the most part, if they tried to fill in some coloring of the actual card on the face or something like that, I want to know what the alteration is. I'm going to buy that card.
Yeah.
Not let me make that decision,
I think that's prudent. That makes a lot of sense to me. And same here. I think in like 95% of the cases, again, I'm not out there actively looking for any altered cards or
No.
trimmed cards. And
No.
the only time I would consider buying one is if there's just nothing I could afford that I would like to look at every day. And it would, I again, we think we're talking about a 52 Topps Mantle. That might be the only one that I would be willing to add. But so let's a couple comments here because a couple things really actually kind of made me go, oh, wait a second after I said that earlier. So Tom Newman says authentic is worthless. Authentic is what you want. I think he means authentic altered is worthless. I guess that's in the eye of the beholder. John Mangini says, I don't like trimmed cards for the reason that it comes from a scammer's collection. And that's what I didn't really think of when I said that before. And that does make me kind of alter, pun intended, my thought. And really, it brings me back to I remember a 52 Topps Mantle on the auction block. It was a PSA 1 and it had a pinhole through it. And someone else mentioned pinhole here. It had a pinhole at the top. Otherwise, this thing is probably a 6. And it sold for PSA 1 money. And this is going back to probably, I probably was watching this card likely, it was likely on eBay back in 2017, 2018, somewhere in there. And I think I tapped out at about $15,000 because I just, that was then, different times. And, I regret that. Obviously, I regret it now because that card today would probably sell for close to $100,000. So I can't afford to buy it anymore. But that's a case where, again, is it altered? Not really. I mean, a kid put a pinhole in it in a very innocent way, right? They didn't do it. That is still alteration. They're altering the state of the card, but they're doing it without any ill content. And I think that that is that is an okay sort of alteration to have. But I just like the Mangini collection says here, I don't know how good I would feel having a card that went through the trim doctor's, laboratory or studio, whatever, and now I'm sitting on that card. Yeah, I agree with John Mangini. That would that wouldn't make me feel so good about the card anymore. So.
And that's why I wanted to add to that. I have one card that I know that is trimmed. Of course, you never know, but as far as I know that it's trimmed, as far as the altered cards that I have, the other ones are card that, well, this was, I know this one was pressed. It was in one of those big holders. It's like a perfect card, but it was put in one of these holders. So this one, this is authentic. I won't take it off, but it was pressed, and that's why it came out that way. So yeah, I do have probably five or six authentic cards, and you saw two of them now. I have one that is trimmed. It's a Ty Cobb card that I know it's had a little haircut on the top, and the other one that I told you, which is the rare one that I have, a couple of rare ones like that are trimmed also.
I mean, some kids
that are
have.
not trimmed, that are authentic colored and stuff, but mainly trimmed. No, I
Right.
have two cards that are trimmed that I know
Well,
of.
you know, and back in the day, I mean, I'm talking in the early days, pre-war, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, kids were trimming their cards to make them all the same size. They were, I just saw, I think it was a 52 Mantle was trimmed down to be the same size as a 50 Bowman because the guy, the kid in the day liked that, the card that size. To me, that's a fun card with a neat story behind it, and you're going to get it for a pretty good price, although you're missing a lot of the card in that case. Tom Newman said authentic altered is worthless. He corrected himself there. Bobby Burrell, and this is on the subjectivity of grading, says we opened a pack of 54 Topps hockey at the Toronto Expo publicly. I was there. I saw this happen. Six amazing cards. A few came back as minimum size. So minimum size is such like an arbitrary thing. It's simply because their holders are too big for the card. So does that, but look at that, that fact penalizes the owner of those cards. Here, Mookie Chilson says, give me a presentable pinhole 52 Mantle. Yes, 100%. I'm with you on that, Mookie. Totally. Justin Boat says, nothing wrong with rounded corner old cards. And this is where that's my sweet spot, Orlando. I love, you know, those 48, 49 Bowman Leaf cards with nice uniform rounding on the corners. I love that. I really don't want my vintage cards to have perfectly squared corners because I get suspicious a lot of the time, especially if they're in, you know, some PSA holders. And it's like, you know, I don't know. It makes you sometimes I think 70% of those cards are, and that number I say could change day to day, but you know, are trimmed. That's the one thing. We talk about not wanting trim cards in our collections, but all of us that have, you know, any amount of volume of cards that are graded and vintage. I gotta think, if you didn't grade them all yourself, a lot of us probably have a few trimmed cards that are not identified as such in our collections. Do you think I'm right about that, or do you think I might be a little paranoid with that comment?
Most of my cards that I've had for my collection. When I bought back in the old days, they were all raw. So the majority of my cards were, I graded them myself. And I did get some minimum size back. I mean, I just got a Whitey 4, 65 Whitey 4, came back minimum size. And I mean, you know, some of these cards that you've had, you know, 30, 20, 30 years, even before any trimming scandal, and they still come back that way. It's just, it happens, you know, and PSA is a little more strict as far as the size for a vintage. SGC is a little more liberal, slightly. Their tolerance is a little bit more for trim card, not trim, I'm sorry, not trim, for cards that are cut short from the factory, you know, because they know that different years, you know, they're different. And, you know, as a set builder, when you put your set together in the old days, you didn't have the sleeves. So you put the set in the box, and I'll show you some boxes of cards from the 70s. You put them and you look at them in the box, and you have cards that are bigger and smaller than, yeah, they're not all exactly the same.
Nope.
And that happens all the time. The difference is, can you tell whether it's trimmed or that cut from the factory? Now, a longtime dealer, and I'll also say, and I don't know if you know, but I did go to the grading school. I went to with Andy Broom over to CSG or
CSG.
CGC, whatever they call it now in Sarasota. And when they needed some graders, they send out notice, and I send back my information. They called me in. I went in there. I did a 2-day instructional class there that they did, and I met with Andy Broom over there to talk to him a little while. Kind of got to see how they tell it. And one of the things that they focused on was altered cards. At the end of the session, this end of the second day, they gave you a test. And the test, they tell you have 10 cards, you got half hour to grade them with grading notes, and you grade them different, you know, centering all that stuff, right? And they tell you one of the cards that you're getting in that 10 cards is altered. You don't know if it's trimmed, colored, whatever it is, you don't know. So you have to try to determine it. And of course, they show you how to do it. And there's different ways to look at it. You know, you have to look through the loop. You have to look at all of the not just the corners, but the side of the card where it's been cut. Because if it's trimmed, you could see that it'll be a little darker. The white part, you'll see white. You know, you have to look in the loop, but there's ways that you can tell where that card has been trimmed. If all of the side of the card, all of the side of the card like that, all looks the same, either they trimmed all four corners or they didn't trim it at all, you know. So there are ways. And of course, they have the black light. You use the black light to see if there's any coloring been added and alterations been added. But, you know, those are the things that, you know, if you're going to buy raw cards like I do, because I buy raw cards, and this 8.5 that you saw, I bought that raw and I got that graded this past year, a few months ago.
Yeah.
You know, but I looked it over and all that stuff. Yeah, you do what you have to do. And when you're going to buy cards like that, in the old days, Jeremy, you know, there was no grading, because before PSA, you had to, when you were dealing with cards, you had to, first of all, determine the grade. You and the buyer had to determine the grade before you got to the price. So you had to really become your own grader. And that's what I learned. And I think people need to do that more often nowadays. They just look at slabs and that's it, you know. So
that's,
I was
it.
Privileged.
You have to look at the card, and instead of believing the grade, you have to decide, do you agree that it was graded correctly by that grader on that day? Do you agree with that grade? Because let's face it, a lot of us probably think we're pretty good at grading cards. And I would think that, and by that, I just mean, we have a feel for it. You look at so many cards, you can, oh, that's going to be a 4, that's a 5. And, you know, we'll be right half the time, and the other half will be off by a grade, maybe a couple times off by a couple grades, if you're seeing everything. But yeah, you have to look at the card and say, do I agree with the grade? And if you don't agree with it because you think the card is lower, is in worse condition than the slab tells you, well, that's a card to avoid, because you're going to have to overpay. But if you can look at a card and think that it's undergraded, and you can buy it for, you know, the average price of cards in that grade, well, now you can get yourself a pretty good deal, most likely. So, yeah, we have to use our own brains, as someone just said in the comments. Let's go to some more comments, though, here. Dan's Vintage says, trimmed is an opinion. Don't tell anybody, but I resubbed two trimmed cards that received numerical grades. Yeah, no, Dan, that does not surprise me that happened. Vintage Goats, if I were to have an altered card, I would like it to have either pinholes or initials. I like knowing that a kid enjoyed it 50 years ago. I love that as well. I've got, where did I put them up there? I've got some old albums for cards from the 50s, and they have initials on them. And I think that's the best part of the story. The professor says, does Orlando have an opinion on doing card restoration for creases that some card doctors are able to do, or is restoring a card altering a card? You know, I think I want to come back to that one in a few minutes, so we'll put that one on the back burner for now. Vintage Goat says, pinholes and initials are my favorites. I love those too. Triple V, great to see Orlando in here. Mangini says, a pinhole should be a 1.5 or a 1, not altered. Why do they have to be 1.5 or a 1? Why can't it be a 3 or a 4? If the card is otherwise a 6, but it has a pinhole, it doesn't kill the condition of the card to me. I think it's over. I think they overly penalize for a simple pinhole. Now, if it's a staple, you got two holes at the top, maybe it's got to come down another grade. But to automatically call it a 1 or a 1.5, it's not fair to the card, I don't think, personally. Mangini says, a tiny pinhole is no issue for me, especially since PSA controls the hobby, and the Kool-Aid, you can get them super cheap. Yeah, agreed. Joe Pro says, I purchased vintage authentic altered cards in both BVG and PSA slabs. I feel like if the altered card status is explicit, it's not a cardinal sin, and sometimes the eye appeal is aesthetically pleasing. And that's, you know, for somebody who is okay knowing that somebody took a blade to the card or an X-Acto knife or whatever. So again, each to their own. Jeff's Card Journey, so many cards from PSA now are coming back mid-size. PSA doesn't want to take the risk of slabbing the card now and then paying for it later. Ridiculous. Yeah, I hear that, Jeff's Card Journey, but I also wonder, like, what is their option? Because it's really hard. It's really hard if they if there is any risk that the card was trimmed and it's smaller, I think they just have to cover their backsides and say, we're just gonna, it's like a lawyer fires his client. Like, you're not obligated to serve everybody who comes to your door. You can take some control. And I think that's what PSA has done, is just taking some control over what liability they might have when some cards in their slabs, and it's for their reputation as well, which, is object, people recognize that that grading is somewhat of a random sort of thing in many cases. And I don't blame PSA for not wanting for not doing it, because I don't know that they know that they're not trimmed, but I'm not sure. Continuing on, just three more here. Bob Boozle says some bozos cut their cards, other morons drown them. Deep Value Investor, he's the burrito guy, says, did I hear burrito? Welcome to the show, as always. And Andrew says Orlando is making a lot of sense for a hobby that doesn't make sense. Okay, let's go back to the professor's comment here, Orlando, in terms of, we just talked about drowning cards, cleaning them. I'll tell you one thing, Orlando. I will not buy a vintage card that has borders that look like it was just packed pulled, because I know it's been whatever, bleached or soaked or whatever. I like my vintage to look vintage. I don't want my vintage to look like it just came out of the pack. Unless it's like your 52 Tops mantle, where it's just super clean. But I want some age. I want my card to show its age a little bit. What about you?
No card restoration at all for me. Nothing. I just want the card as is. Why do you need to mess with the card? Why do you need to touch the card? I just don't believe in, and not even cleaning the card. I don't believe in any of that. I just want the card as it was in its natural state. If it's got a little dirt stuck on there, that's fine. And if you don't want it, don't buy that card. Get another one. But as far as cleaning, I will never buy a card that I know has been, soaked and stuff like that, and with chemicals, because usually that's what they do. And I've run into that issue, as a specific collector of a certain set. Sometimes there's cards that there's only 20 known to exist, and I've bought some cards, and I won't mention who it's from, but that, yes, they were literally soaked with chemical, and the stain in the back, they were glued onto to an album. The stain in the back came back after a certain amount of years. I did a video on it. I'm seeing if I can find the card. I have it here, actually. I have it here somewhere. But the actual stain on that card, when I first got it, it looked like it wasn't there. It was all white in the back, too white. You know what I mean? But at the end, here it is. Here we go. Let me check it out. Okay. This card here has been soaked out of an album. It was beautiful, white, beautiful. But the stain on the back, it was not there when I first got it. I've had this card for years now. And the stain has that you see the you see the glue stain right there? You see how that's come back? Now, this is the same card. Okay, this is the highest graded example of this card, near mint mint 8. It's from 1888. Okay, and this is the example that was soaked. It's so hard to see it,
It is.
but the back of this one, of the eight, is just, you can see the back how it is. It's not as white, but there's no staining. It's all even. This one is a lot whiter. You see it together, the back, how white this is? That's been soaked with some type of chemical. It removed it and made it nice and white, And then after years of being in this holder, whether it didn't get enough air or whatever, the back glue started coming back. This card, I'm taking it to the National. I'm going to show it to PSA and tell them this is now, it's a six, This should be a two with the back staying. See what they tell me on that one. And I'm going to take the highest graded card they have of the same guy, and I'm going to show them the difference. I've got the PSA 8 that they graded, and I'm going to compare them and see the difference. And you could see
Oh,
in
yeah.
the back and the front the difference in colors. So I'm going to
Yeah.
show PSA how to do their job. And a card from how that card is, too white.
I'm with you, man. If it's too white, I don't feel good about it. It's similar to what Mangini was saying earlier about, having a trimmed card from a trimmer. Where did it come from? It doesn't. A card that looks too clean to me, and that did go through that process. I just don't. I'm not interested. I love cards that grade out in that, VG kind of range, that threes to fives that again look their age, have some toning on the white borders, slight rounding on all four corners. I want that, and I want that rounding to be uniform. I don't want it to, just the top corners to be rounded, the bottom ones to be square. I want them all to have the same amount of rounding. That to me is just a lovely card to have, and so much more interesting than a card that's been worked on by anybody. So now, we have some comments about Kurt's card care coming through here. People saying, oh, Kurt's card care can fix that card for you. But is it a permanent fix? Because it looks like sometimes these things can come back. And I don't know Kurt. I don't think I've ever talked to him, but I don't know what his position or if he's someone who, would have taken that out in the first place, what sort of guarantee he offers that it will never come back. And then even still, if you know that it's sort of dormant in that card, I still don't want it. So yeah, it's that's where I'm at on it. Same as you, pretty much.
Yeah, I won't buy it.
All right. Well, listen, let's talk about another. So when collectors, the parent company to PSA, purchased SGC about 2 weeks ago or so now, just under 2 weeks ago, I had just gotten, I believe I maybe it was that day, I just left for vacation. And I haven't done any, everyone's done content on it. I haven't done anything about it. And I'm not really planning to, except for having a little chat here if it comes up on one of my future shows. But I wanted to just, address it briefly and, ask you your position on it. Does the fact, and I did have a conversation at my local show today, I did have a conversation with somebody who actually was pretty cool. Someone recognized me and came and said hello, said that he watches some of what I do and on YouTube, that is. And anyway, we chatted about it a little bit, and that was the first time I'd really talked to anybody about it. That isn't, someone that I talk to every day, let's say. In any event, what are your thoughts? Does the fact that the same company that owns PSA now owns SGC, does that change the hobby for you, Orlando, at all? Does it change how you hobby?
It's not going to change how I hobby. We don't know what's going to happen in the future, 5 years from now. But I think that as far as SGC and vintage, which is my expertise, they have been grading vintage for what, 30 years now. And, they're known to be very good, solid graders. Actually, a little, probably maybe a little bit better in some vintage than PSA. So I think that the value, as far as that talking value, I think they're going to be stable as far as the vintage that's been graded. In the future, I don't know. Nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. My opinion on the on the acquisition is that I think PSA is going to learn a lot from owning SGC. They're going to probably maybe use their graders or have their graders teach PSA's graders how to grade certain cards or certain vintage cards that PSA may not be experts in. So I think that's going to help out. Remember, PSA has hired so many new graders over this COVID period, doing over 1 million cards a month. So I think they need some veterans or some more guidance in that. And I think they're going to grab some of that information from SGC on what are some of their standards, how do their standards compare to our standards, and let's see if we can improve. I think PSA also has to improve on their customer service. It's just horrible. And they're getting a little better from what I see in their turnaround times, but that's where SGC and the customer service turnaround times. I mean, those are the kind of things that PSA, I think, is going to learn from SGC. I think that's going to help them grow. SGC was never going to overtake PSA. PSA is, the elephant, the monster. They're never even getting close. They don't even do what, maybe 10% of what PSA does. So, I think they're going to keep it separate. In my opinion, they should keep it separate for a while. Study each other. Remember, now PSA is going to have the SGC's customer list and everything, So, I think PSA is just going to see what happens, let them do their own thing, and keep an eye on SGC and say, let's see how they're going to function. They've been successful and they've been growing faster than PSA has been lately, at least in the vintage area. So I think that's kind of what I my opinion on that.
Yeah, no, really, really insightful comments for me to hear. I don't really have much to say about it. It doesn't change my hobby at all. Doesn't it's like it's big news for the greater hobby. I understand that, but for me, it doesn't change anything with respect to either of the companies. I don't. I've just, I'm not. You see acquisitions happen in across industries all the time, and very often it's for synergies. And to eliminate redundancies, similar to synergies, saying it a different way, I guess. And so I think they'll find ways to streamline things. Will they keep both brands? I don't know. Maybe, but for how long? I don't know. I think they acquired some grading skill, some grading expertise. That's great. Peter Steinberg, who has been instrumental in SGC's growth, is. I mean, he's an impressive young guy, Peter Steinberg is, and I got to think that even having him as part of the team, usually the founder goes within, by the end of the year, the founder's gone after their company being acquired. I know he's not the founder, but he's the president or CEO or whatever his title is. In this case, I think they might want to keep him because he's young and he's very professional and seems to have a good head on his shoulders. So. We'll see what happens. But for me, again, Orlando doesn't change a thing. I didn't care as much as everybody else did that I see talking about it all the time. And but that's just because just doesn't really impact my collecting much. I'm going to continue to assess the cards myself. And if they are in a holder that I don't like the aesthetics of, I can change that, or I'll just wait for a copy that's in a holder that I do like if I have to. So I don't really have much to say about it. Other than don't it's not I don't think it's worthy of bringing you down in the hobby, or like okay, a couple more comments here. Boy, you guys have been on fire tonight. Mark Santucci says, Jeremy, what about a 1976 Johnny Bench? Do you want a 5 or a 7? In that case, Mark, I would prefer a 7. Vintage says, Orlando, are you okay with soaking just to get the card glued down out of the album? Can you remove them without chemicals? Asking because I don't know. Do you want to just briefly
Okay.
respond to that, Orlando?
Yeah. Yes. For soaking in strictly in distilled water to get something out of an album, I'm okay with that. There are a lot of sets, for example, in Cuba and Venezuela, a lot of those cards were made to be stuck on albums. So whether you know it or not, a lot of those have been removed from albums.
Yeah.
And yes, if they're removed with just distilled water and soaked and dried, it's not really gonna alter them or harm them. Now, if you put some chemical, some hydrogen peroxide, stuff like that to whiten the card or to do more alterations, I'm not down with that. So strictly just in certain cases, yes. But a lot of the cards that are removed from those albums, especially the Cuban cards, end up grading 1 or 2, no higher than that. So Keep that in mind. But generally, no, I don't like to do that. But sometimes, yeah, I'm okay with that in certain cases.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes it's practical, right, to get it out of the album. That's a sort of a, and
Yeah.
then it's bringing it's. Yeah, I get it's tough to say. Is it restoration? Is it alteration? Or is it rejuvenation? You're kind of giving the card a second life, and there's I think there's something to be said about that. Skeppy says there is likely cards in your collection right now that have been restored, so you're okay. That as long as you're okay with that, as long as the label says it isn't. And that's a question. I think that's a question directed at me. I don't know, Skeppy, where you got that information, how you got that out of anything that I said. But if that is directed at me, I'll just say that I likely do have a card or two in my collection that's been restored. Just, it's a numbers game at that point. And no, I'm not okay with it because I don't know about it. If I don't know about it, I don't know about it. I once did have a card that I suspected was altered, was altered by bleach or making it nicer. I sold it. I didn't want it anymore. I don't know. I
Yeah.
can't tell you. I can't tell you if it was or wasn't. But it just didn't sit right with me. So no, I don't want any card like that. Foul Fiveball says I don't collect plastic, only cardboard. That's a nice approach. Jeremy, Cooter Lev says friends don't let friends encapsulate vintage cards in PSA slabs. Well, then no, then we none of us have friends because
Cooter.
they've got most of the market, that's for sure. Mike Petty says they will shut down that company in 12 months and steal money from the collectors and crossover fees. It's all part of the grand design, in my humble opinion. Maybe. Hopefully there are some positive reasons for the acquisition. The Hobby with Cage says customer service and turnaround times are easy for SGC. They have less than one tenth of PSA's volume, but that's not a Cage. I don't think you're doing any favor to PSA with that comment, because all that tells me is that PSA hasn't scaled and they've let their customers. Now, I haven't submitted to PSA in a while, so I haven't dealt with their customers. I can't speak with it firsthand, but when you grow, you got to grow everywhere. Otherwise, you're just, as we grow, you're gonna get new shoes to keep up with your growth, just like you're gonna get new pants to keep up with your growth. You're not just gonna get new pants and not wear new shoes. You need to grow all your departments, all your areas, or else you're doing a disservice to your customers, to the community, to the industry, especially when you have so much of the market share. So while it might be, he says they had less. Or customer service turnaround times are easy for SGC. I think it comes down to priority as well too. I'm not willing to give PSA a pass for those reasons there. K Card says anyone getting a big check will leave in the world of M&A, and that's been what I've seen. I've experienced it firsthand, and that's I've seen that myself as well. Okay, wow, lots of. We're coming out. Oh wow, we're 2 seconds away from the 2 hour mark, Orlando.
Wow, already.
Yeah, already. It doesn't take long when you're having a fun conversation. Let's just do a few more comments here, and maybe we'll wrap up. But I'll go through a few more right now and get your thoughts on some of these, Orlando, if that's okay. Andrew says altered cards and trim cards used to be malpractice. Now it's accepted, not by me, but others don't seem to care. Depends on the, I think that's a sliding scale too. Don't you like there different people have different tolerances to different circumstances around a card. So I think that makes sense to me. Justin says, I love how Jeremy's upfront and real. Thank you, Justin. I try to be that way for sure. Decoy says, I think we need to start a downgrade campaign for modern cards with the slogan, run, rub some dirt on it. See, he's saying this tongue in cheek with the, but it's not that far-fetched, Orlando. I'm part of a vintage group chat, and a comment often made is, look, I've upgraded by downgrading. Because let's face it, Orlando, there are PSA threes that are a lot nicer than fives and sixes out there. And you can go all over the grading scale and make comments like that. And there's nothing, it's a really good feeling to, sell your PSA 7 for $5,000. I'm just running pretend number, sell your PSA 7 for 5,000, buy a PSA 4 for $1,000 or $1,500 that you like more, and you have all that money left to buy more cards. Have you ever done something like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I do that all the time. Sometimes you have to, you know, because I have a mini Minoso that's a five, looks like a seven, you know. So yeah, sometimes you just have to move a card and eventually pick up another one. I sold my Jackies, all my Jackie Robinson cards, you know, and they were pretty nice, but I figured now I can get one lot cheaper, less grade. Because mine was way off, mine were pretty much all off centered. Because in the old days, you didn't look at centering as much as corners, you know. So now reevaluating some of the cards, and I sold some of the ones that I didn't. But yeah, for sure, you know, sell some of those sevens or eights and get yourself a beautiful five, and you're good to go.
That's, one of the oldest sort of sayings out there is, buy the best you can afford, right? And it goes for lots of different things in the collectible art world, that sort of thing. But I don't know that that makes a ton of sense right now when the best is defined by what a grading company says is the best. And it just doesn't all reconcile in my mind anymore. Once you start to think for yourself, you realize that you are literally at the mercy of, and we know how hard it is for them to hire people in the grading in the grading department because they can't pay them enough, and it's a tedious job. It gets very tiring. 8 hours into a shift on Thursday or Friday, into the week, how accurate are they? How awake are these guys that are grading the cards? You really, as collectors, we really need to. It's more important that we agree with the grade than what the grade is in the first place, And if you can find a card that presents really well with nice eye appeal, that is, technically has a lower grade because of maybe a hardly visible hairline crease, 3 millimeters long on the back of the card. Like, come on, what an opportunity to get a great card, in that condition, in that state. So I'm all for upgrading by downgrading. I think that's a great way to be.
Remember that the graders only get 2 to 3 minutes to look at that card. That's
Even
it.
two to three?
If that.
I think you're being extremely generous.
I'm being
I don't
generous.
know. I'm guessing it's
No,
like
I am being
30 to
generous.
45
It's
seconds.
no, sometimes, yeah, you got to get it done in a minute or two because you got to take notes too. They got to, they all have grader notes. They won't share it with you, but they do.
But they won't tell you why your card got the grade it did, but they
Yeah.
will but they but they'll give you the grade. Andrew says Orlando is a comment generator. He sure is. I'm having trouble keeping up with everything here today, but still a lot of fun. Deep Value, Brent Wire, the burrito guy, Mr. who really brought the Pareto principle to the hobby's conscience, says, do we think the market has gone too far with centering as being the main focus? It used to be corners, like you said, and I agree. Orlando was right. I mean, I had a card shop in the early 90s, Orlando, and it was all about corners. Centering was not really, it was corners and edges back then. It wasn't so much about centering. To me, and I've said a million times on my channel here, Orlando, registration is most important to me. It comes above everything else, especially on vintage, where it's mostly an issue. I want my card to, I want, I don't want 3D card. I don't want to put on 3D glasses. What do you think about Deep Value's comment here, and where do you fall on centering?
I agree with him. I think it all comes down to eye appeal. Centering is a big part of eye appeal, but definitely the color registration to me are the main things. I want that card to be very well registered, and I want those colors to pop. I don't want a card that's a little faded, you know. The corners aren't as important anymore to me. And definitely I think centering is important because it adds to the eye appeal. So it's become more popular because vintage cards are much tougher to find. People are realizing it's tough to find a centered vintage card.
Yeah. It is tough to find. That's your sort of organic scarcity as far as centeredness goes. It is tougher to find, and they do look really nice. But a perfectly centered cards with 90 degree square corners, nice untouched edges, but that is completely out of focus and blurry. You know, you
Yeah.
see it a lot with the Jackie rookies and, you know, the cards from those from that era. I would much rather have a low grade, well-focused card with good color and rounded
Yeah.
corners. Like,
That's a tough set to get centered and registration. The 40 and 49 leaf.
yeah, beautiful cards. Beautiful
Yeah.
cards. Yankees fan told his wife today he was an eight. She said, "No, you're an off-centered six."
Oh.
Love it. Good. At least she knew how to respond to that comment. The professor says, should chrome cards that become green be considered altered? I don't think so, because no one touched the card for that to happen. That's just a chemical reaction that happens over the years, is my understanding. Mark Santucci bought an off-center card today, but no creases. Very good, very good. Mike Petty says, I'm all about Reggie registration. Andrew, vintage cards are supposed to look old. It would be like telling your grandma to get Botox. Right? Many of them do, though. That do get
Yeah.
so it's like that's a funny sort of, that's a funny comparison there. The grandmother's getting Botox, or the card's getting restoration, I guess. Yeah.
Cleaning.
Cleaning, right? Yeah. What's wrong with a grandma with Botox, says K cards? Yeah. All right. Now we're going off the rails here for sure. All right, Orlando. Well, listen, man, this has been a lot of fun. Great, great topics. You're a pleasure to have on and to chat with. Very, I can see why you're so popular. You're just so laid back, and you clearly love the hobby. I was about to say you're in it for all the right reasons, but even flippers are in it. No, is that a wrong reason to be in the hobby? Some would say so, but I can't think of any wrong reason you're in the hobby. And I do love how, we have our chronology in the hobby is very similar, Orlando. We started around the same age and we've been in our whole lives, but we both slowed down for that 5 year period in the college years. And so I feel like we have a lot in common. That makes me, build even further rapport with you. Andrew says, Orlando, great job. Cooter Lev, that's a funny comment right there. Deep Value thinks you have a nice soul, Orlando. Very nice. Brent Dan says, a fantastic show, Jeremy. Thanks for showing such regard to hobby hero Orlando. Brent says, no wrong reason to be in this hobby. And I try to be open-minded for, unless you are committing fraud or you're being deceptive, you're trying to rip people off, I'm okay with you being in the hobby. Thank you, Justin Bode. Appreciate that. Orlando, listen, I want to just again say thanks for coming on. Thanks for your time today. Short notice as well on meeting with me, considering I was out of pocket here for the last 12 days. And I want to also thank you for just bringing so many new people to my channel. I honestly, I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know that would happen. But
Yeah, I posted it. Yeah.
well, thank you for doing that. And when that happens, it just opens my eyes to how big the community is and how fragmented it really is too, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. It's just the way it is. So I'm always so grateful when a great guest brings more people to the show, and that just, maybe one or two of them convert and join me in my chat here when I do my lives on Saturday nights. And that's just more engagement in the hobby. It's more enhancement to my experience, to my life. So I want to thank you for that, Orlando.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what the hobby is all about. Just everybody helping each other. And even though we all have smaller little niches, we're all one big community. And these are the type of things that I like to do, interview with all different types of people to get everybody together. We need to do
Yeah.
more of that. So thank you
100%.
very much, Jeremy.
Thank you again, Orlando. Okay, guys, I'm going to read the final comments and then we're going to wrap this one up. Grotman Card says, awesome show. Nice seeing a fellow South Florida guy be such a great representation of the hobby. That's Mitch Grotman. Thank you, Mitch. Mark Santucci gives us a 5 out of 5. The chat blew up. It did. I had trouble keeping up tonight, guys. Return to Collecting says, thanks for having Orlando on. He's the best. Stooks, as always, thank you so much for being here. Mike Petty says, I finally turned the corner after 3 years skating downhill with a glass of lemonade in one hand from here. I'll take that as a compliment, Mike Petty. You can be tough to please, but if I can do it, I'll be proud of when it happens. Bobby Burrell says, please hit the love button. The show was that good. Thank you, Bobby Burrell, as Always. Thank you. Justin says, Orlando, you are great. 1956, Topps guy. Feels like YouTube and IG communities are different worlds. It's so true, Matthew. They are different worlds. And one world, one each of those worlds, neither of those worlds represents the whole hobby, right? If we can get together, like there's, it's just a cross section. It's a cross section, but not, I wouldn't say even say it's a complete cross section, either of them, but they're there. Mookie Chilson, thank you so much. Mike Petty, amazing how every guest isn't a scammer or ex-scammer. Thanks, Orlando. You're the best. Mike Petty, I've had over 300 people on the show, Mike. You got to do your full research to see that. Andrew, thank you so much. Irish Flyers, appreciate that. Jeff McMahon, good night to you. And Mike Petty, thanks you. Orlando, all right, man. Again, thank you for joining. Everybody, have a great night, Saturday night. I'll be back tomorrow with my friend Josh Madigan of the Hockey Cards Gong Show, where we will be covering the PWCC Hockey Weekly Auction, where we do educate and take Q&A. It is a lot of fun. Foul Flyball says do more of these kinds of shows. Hey, I do them. I do them. They're not every week, but I do them for sure. Next week will be very similar, I think. We have another great collector coming on next week. Orlando, I'm going to give you a chance to give your final words and message to the audience, and then this episode will be over.
Just want to thank everybody for showing up and staying in the chat for 2 hours. That's incredible. And thanks for all your support. I appreciate it all. Thank you, Jeremy, very, very much. Enjoy the hobby, guys. Make some new friends.
Ah, wait, that's a great exit right there. All right, guys. Orlando, great having you on. Everybody else, thanks again. This episode of Sports Cards Live is now over.